kind of sucked. Didn't it, Kevin Barker? Destroying all the furniture here. I mean, I came in here today, and Barker, I've never seen you this worked up about a loss. You were almost, it was almost comparable to my Derek Fisher meltdown
of last year.
It was pretty damn close. Dude, you're calling for the manager to be fired.
That's a lie.
I lied.
Eight
I'm kidding.
Games in, no chance.
I'm kidding.
But he didn't have a good night.
I'm kidding.
I mean,
no,
let's be honest.
He did not. No.
He did not.
No.
It's not one of his better jobs.
No.
Yeah,
no. Neither did the, and I'm kidding. He didn't. Please.
I did not say that.
He did not say that. He did not
say
that.
Nor would I ever say that.
Nor would he ever say that.
Let Jeff say it.
I got in trouble the last time I said that, even though I was right.
Oh, about Gibby?
Well, I was off by
three weeks. Well, he's in the shower or something.
No, I was off by three.
Wasn't he in the shower? When Pilar did something good.
A couple of years ago where I said that they were going to let him go at the end of the homestand.
That's before Gibby tore me a new one behind the batting cage. Remember when you were standing there? And
I can't remember.
I said, what are you doing with Jose Bautista?
Don't you just worry about it, Bark?
He told me I lived on the other side of that mountain.
No, yeah, well,
hey, Bark, why don't you just not worry about it?
Yeah, why don't you just not worry about it, Bark?
That's awesome.
There you go. 7-5, Barker, your Toronto Blue Jays.
How about that?
Your Toronto Blue Jays lost to my Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
How about that?
7-5 in extra innings. There's a lot of things to talk about with this. I mean, there's some good things. Vladdy Jr., we can start with that, but that's kind of easy. We got to talk about Danny Jansen. I hate to do this, but we have to go right to the guts of that game. Well, come on. You're going to tell me Danny Jansen comes up the bat. What was it? Seventh inning?
Yep.
Seventh inning?
Lead off double. Panic.
And you're not going to bunt. Now, and here's the thing. I don't like bunting. Bunting is dumb if it's done, I think, within the first 5 or 6 innings of a game. Seventh inning, at that point, to me, you manage a game differently, especially when you got a guy Julian Merriweather. At that point, you manage the game differently. And I'm sorry, I understand. Danny Jansen didn't get a bunt down on the last series. I get that.
Who cares?
If he's playing for you every day, then you've got to ask him to get that
Danny
bunt down.
Yeah, Danny Jansen's hitting buck and change in 2020. He's hitting a buck and change in 2021. What would tell you that he could take Tony Watson,
to the opposite field.
Who's left-handed.
Yes.
Who's going to bury the sinker in on a righty.
Yeah.
What would tell you, standing over there or sitting over there where Charlie was sitting, that Danny Jansen, after a guy who is a left-handed hitter, just got the head out on 91, hit a double, leadoff double, Your team's struggling offensively. What would tell you that Danny Jansen can walk up, let the ball travel, manipulate his barrel, stay inside a ball, finesse that ball to second base, get that runner from second base to third base? Nothing in your right mind would tell you that he could do that right now.
I don't even think there are any analytics that would show that.
That don't make no sense.
What the hell was that? Where did that drop come from?
That's a good one. That's not me.
Damn.
It's one of those situations in a game where look what's going out around you. Look what's happening around you. Look who's standing on the on-deck circle when Danny Jansen's at the plate, who you have DHing, who's 0-for-3 with 2 punchies already. Make it a little simplified for him and go – you know, he's DHing. Marcus Semien is. Probably not good at DHing. Probably shouldn't be DHing the first week of the season.
Man,
he's my everyday
now you're going
second
over
baseman.
On Marcus Semien.
Probably shouldn't be DHing. He should make it a little easier on him to hit a little lazy fly ball. Guess what he does when he comes up? He hits a little lazy fly ball to center. What would have happened if that guy had been on third? He would have probably scored. Now, would they have walked him, intentionally walked him, to pitch to Kevin Biggio? Maybe.
Your point is, though, it's easier to get a guy in from third.
Especially
than
right now with this team with the at-bats that they're having.
You
know, they're in between and they're guessing a ton, and they're overswinging a lot. It's the manager's job occasionally to put your team in the best position to win the game when they're battling. Now, by the way, you got Julian Merriweather, who all of a sudden is the greatest thing since sliced bread, standing in the bullpen, and now we know that he can go multiple innings, and now we know that he can throw a slider for a strike. Think if he can do that, Jeff. If he can throw a slider and a changeup somewhat for a strike, one of the two. Doesn't have to do both of them all the time. Added to the 98-99. Consistently can do that. I just think you you had a real easy time right there to go, we're all in right now to win the games that we're supposed to win. And they didn't. They let it go a little deeper. And your team struck out 14 times yesterday. Used six relievers yesterday. You wouldn't have had to use six relievers if, when the situation arises, you do the right thing. Danny Jansen's up, can't hit his weight right now. You do what's best for the team. You put the guy on the on-deck circle in the best position to help your team. If they walk him, so what? You put Kevin Biggio in the best position to help your team win a game. It's easier to get that guy in from third. Maybe Kevin Biggio lays down a little lazy bunt. Well, you know, just to get the guy in from, he's not trying to do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. As long as you don't hit into a double play or pop out, you got a good chance of scoring the guy. You have a better chance of scoring the guy from third than right now you do from second. It made me want to scratch my head. And then Danny hits that little three hopper to the shortstop. And how many Blue Jays fans you think were sitting at home throwing their hands in the air? Yep. Why is this happening?
This is the point, and I want to reinforce this point. Think about what Danny Jansen was being asked to do. As Barker points out, left-hander on the mound. You know what you're going to see from him. You know where he's going to throw the ball.
Been around forever. Tony Watts has been around forever.
Could you pick a guy on the Blue Jays? And I understand Danny Jansen, you know, people still think there's a decent offensive player in there. Whatever.
It'd be hard to find him right now. All I'm saying
is there are people who think that. But my point is, you're not asking him to pull a ball. You're asking him to advance a runner, something very specific. Great. I mean, if he hits a home run, it's wonderful.
He's not hitting a home run. And massage a ball to second base.
Do you realistically think that Danny Jansen can do that? No, I do not.
Why are you not bunting?
I do not. I'm with you. I'm not with you about the bunt thing.
I think you bunt. The bunt is about where your team is at. And when your team is struggling the way the Blue Jays are, a couple of guys are not bunting in the first inning.
That's what I'm saying.
But point being is, if I'm the fifth inning and I'm facing a really good pitcher and I want to get a guy over, you lose games that way.
No, because then I still have to get the Merriweather at that point. But Merriweather's
got nothing to do with the fifth inning. It depends on who you're facing, where your lineup's at. Your lineup's not too hard to pitch to right now.
Dude, if my everyday catcher is bunting in the fifth inning, then he shouldn't be my everyday catcher. I'm sorry. I mean, we're just going to disagree on this. We're just going to disagree on it. That's all.
What's the difference in the fifth inning and the seventh inning? Is there a real difference?
Because there's two more innings to play.
I like the lead.
Eesh, I don't know, man. Anyhow, we got to talk about another at bat, one that you picked out. I admit when I watched it, it was frustrating to me as well, but I didn't get all bent out of shape the way you did. You came in loaded for bear Set it up for the listeners.
Here's the theory.
Okay, set up the situation
the
for the listeners.
The younger you are, the more you spin it. The older you are, the harder you throw it. That's been the thing since I played. The older a hitter is, the harder you want to throw it to him because they have a little trouble catching up to the heater. The younger you are, most of the time you would think they got bat speed. They can hit the heater. What do? You spin it to them. Okay, that's a little bit of what these teams are doing to the Blue Jays. Very aggressive.
So younger hitter, you're going to spin it more. The pitcher's going to spin it more. Ball. Older hitter, you're going to try to just beat him with
exactly
velocity.
Like Griffin Canning did last night. He thought he would go slider first and then elevate the heater. That's sort of what he's doing. But you got the 10th inning. You got Kevin Biggio up. You got Junior Guerra, who is a notorious split-finger guy.
That's all he's got.
It's not all he's got.
Mostly.
He likes it.
Yeah.
He throws it a bunch. Okay, that at bat, if I'm Kevin Biggio, I walk over to Guillermo Martinez, who's the hitting coach.
Okay, situation?
Guillermo, man on second. Man on second because it's the 10th inning.
Right.
Right?
And
you're trying to give yourself the best chance to hit a ball hard. Okay? All you have to do, you don't game plan against a Guerra. You're not going to game plan before a series starts against a guy like that. So that's why you walk up to the hitting coach and you go, hey, what's he got? Okay, he throws a split finger. Last year, batters hit .143 off his split finger. This year, nobody's gotten a hit off it. Probably don't want to look for that. Okay, mm-hmm. He battled. He got to a 3-1 count, threw him a split finger. He was out in front, okay. What are you thinking? Okay, I was way out in front of a split finger. He loves to throw it. I now know because he threw me just five in a row, and obviously my hitting coach was recommending that maybe I go up and look for split finger because at-bats will tell you that they are thinking secondary pitches before fastballs, and then you get to a 3-2 count, and you look at a four-seamer 93 miles an hour right down the middle. Point being is, why go up? And it was obvious that he was looking, Kevin was, for the split finger. I just told you stats. I'm not a smart guy, Jeff. But
yeah,
I want to give myself a chance. I'm not saying you can get a hit, but give yourself a chance against the guy that has a really good pitch,
mm-hmm.
which is the split finger. I don't want to try and hit that.
No, you're not going to do anything with it. That's why he throws it.
He gets into a hitter's count 3-1. He throws him a split finger. He's out in front. Okay, I got you that. Now I know that thing's good, and I don't want to look for it again. I want to look for fastball because it's two strikes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my little two-strike approach that I'm proud of, that I've been mm-hmm. working on in the offseason. I can use that now. I'm going to basically look right down the middle here. And if it's a split finger, I'm going to try to battle that thing off. But if he grooves me one, I'm going to try and lay that to left center field, maybe drive in a run.
Mm-hmm.
What's he do? He takes it right down the middle for strike three. And then you see the camera over there. He's got his head down. And he's shaking his head back and forth. It's at bats like that, that if they don't get better throughout the Blue Jays lineup, it's you even saw Vladimir Guerrero Jr. yesterday, who had a really good day, cheating to a 2-0 slider. He's looking for fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Point is, why don't you not walk to the plate and look fastball first? Watch Mike Trout yesterday. You know, who you said you'd rather watch Ohtani play than you would rather watch Mike Trout play.
That wasn't me.
Greatest player on the planet.
That wasn't me. That was someone else.
He walks to the plate. What's he look like he's ready to hit? He ain't ready to hit no breaking ball.
No, he's
ready to hit the heater.
Yep.
Right? And then I'm going to adjust to everything else. It's a little confusing. Is it an approach organizational that you go up and look for a secondary pitch and expand to the heater? Is it a Kevin, a Vladdy, a Bo approach, and they've sort of trickled it down to everybody else? Is it a Guillermo Martinez approach? Because you're seeing this a ton where for whatever reason they had 7 hits yesterday.
How many punches?
2 hits, 14. They had 2 hits on pitches that were above 90 miles an hour. Two hits.
What did we talk about yesterday?
That's the homer that Kevin Biggio hit that was 93 to right center. These guys throw too hard. They throw secondary pitches most of the time because people can't hit them. It's almost like the Blue Jays lineup think that they can do something that no other lineups can do. Instead of just simplifying it like Mike Trout's. Mike Trout is such a talented person that he's basically said, I'm going to make this thing as simple as I possibly can make it. I'm going to go up and look for something right down the middle until I get to two strikes and I have to whatever I have to do with two strikes. But it's that simple-minded of I look for something straight, I look for something hard that I can drive, I can create a little backspin. I'm in an athletic position where my takes are a little bit better. It's just these big, giant, wild swings, and they're guessing a ton. And I just thought it's a little confusing because we talk a lot about this lineup and how good they can be. It's everybody at the big league level is talented. Now you got to think your way through some things a little bit. From what you've seen so far, do you think they can do that as a lineup as a whole? Not sure.
Let me ask the obvious question. First of all, let me set this up for the listeners. Game 2 of the series goes tonight, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Jays have just announced that they will be using an opener. So David Phelps, don't get me started. David Phelps is going to start in place of TJ. Don't get me started.
Yeah,
he's going to start in place of TJ. Let me finish. He's going to start in place of TJ Zoik. In about 5 minutes or so, we're going to be joined by Perry Manassian, the Angels general manager, former assistant GM and advisor of the Toronto Blue Jays. Really looking forward to that. And then the last part of the show, there's a bunch of weird ass stuff going on in baseball.
Yeah.
We got to talk about Michael Conforto yesterday, the walk-off hit by pitch. We got to talk about Trevor Bauer's balls. And so we'll just leave it at that. We'll talk about Trevor Bauer's balls later on in the show. And I forgot what I was going to say. No, I didn't. The point you just made about the batting order. Does George Springer, is he the type of hitter that put in that batting order is going to help address that situation.
I would say lead by example. He's a really good fastball hitter. You know, it's you see the guy in front of you having an approach of, look, you can't consistently hit the thing that spins. You just can't. That's the difference between the minor leagues and the big leagues, is the way they spin it and when they spin it. That's why they throw it so much. That's why Guerra throws the split finger, because nobody can hit it. Why try to go up? You know, it's very hard to tell the difference between a split finger and a fastball. That's why you really got to bear down on a certain location. You got to really get that thing elevated. You got to zone. You're a big leaguer. I just say the at-bats have to get better. And if George can come and give them an at-bat where they're seeing, you know, I'm hammering. I've got my nice little not over swinging, not guessing, little sweet approach where it's short and quick, and I got my nice little, you know, not over-exaggerated finish, and I'm hammering some heaters. Maybe that'll trickle down to everybody else.
Any concern at all in your mind about some of the frustration we saw yesterday? Seven innings into the season. I'll tell you, when he raised his hand, you know what I remember Randy Johnson. This is aging myself. I remember Randy Johnson breaking his hand, punching a dugout wall.
Yeah, it's water bottles. He was.
But my point is, every time I see somebody raise their fist to do that goes through my mind.
I don't know this for a fact, but he looks to me like he's trying to carry the team. He's trying to hit a grand slam every time he walks up with nobody on base because George is not there. He's done some talking. I said this before. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the one that said, which he should. I mean, maybe say it a little quieter. But he's one of the guys.
I didn't have any problem with that because everybody.
I didn't have a problem with that either. But when you say it, not everybody says that. When you do say it, there's a little bit comes with that. And then you're one of your better hitters that you went out and paid a bunch of money to hasn't started the season. You feel like you have to be the guy and carry the team. You know, he's taking these big giant swings. That doesn't work at this level, right? And then he missed the 3-1 hanger that was a little bit middle of the way because he's got a little front hip pull and the bat's dragging. He's got a little bit more uppercut than he normally has. It's okay. You're going to go through. You've got lots of moving parts. It's okay. But the only way he gets out of it is to pencil his name in the shortstop. Jeff, I said it.
I know.
Shortstop. None of this. Four games in, he's DHing. He's your everyday shortstop. It's like Marcus Semien. Why are you DHing your second baseman?
I'm sure the high performance department.
It just doesn't make any sense,
probably,
right?
What did Bo do?
Struck out a couple times DH and didn't look right. What did Marcus Semien do? Missing heaters, center cut at 93 like he normally does.
They probably failed their grip test, or they probably couldn't do 100 chin-ups. Or what is it, the kettlebell? Is that the one they had?
I don't even know what that was.
Kenrys Morales.
When I played.
Poor Kenrys Morales almost. Anyhow.
Right, you go to Home Depot, buy you a little duct tape. If it's sore, you wrap a little duct tape around it and let's roll.
Perry Manassian is general manager of the Los Angeles Angels. That's not bad. Your first job as a GM, you get Mike Trout, you get Shohei Ohtani, and you got a guy named Albert Pujols. Nobody even talks about him. He going to the Hall of Fame. Perry Manassian's next. This is Baseball Central. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, we spent the first 20 minutes, or you in particular, Barker, spent the first 20 minutes being negative.
That's not true.
You did. So yeah. Before Perry Manassian joins us, there's some folks we want to give some love to. We're going to do it right now. We're going to give love first and foremost to Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yeah.
That play, I'm not going to mention Vladdy transitioning to first base anymore.
Just because he jumped off the ground and caught a line drive from Ohtani?
Not mentioning anything.
That's why? Yeah. No, I like the swing better. He looks to me like he's not trying to hit a fly ball. Stop listening to everybody talk around you and
launch angle and
do
blah,
exactly
blah, blah,
what
blah.
You do better than most people, which is hit line drives.
Yeah.
Yeah, level your swing out.
Dante Bichette made this point. I went back and listened to a couple of interviews we did with Dante Bichette, and I made a note of this. I made a note, and this is a grubby little notebook I have. Dante Bichette talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Got wing sauce on it.
Focus on hitting line drives. He said he could be Dave Winfield. Focus on hitting line drives.
Yeah, right center, left field line. That's it.
Yeah. That's
all you got to do is stay within yourself and swing at strikes.
He does, because let's face it, like a lot of people, we talk about weight with Vladdy Jr. We need to give that guy a lot of credit. He looks
better than
I thought he would.
He owned it. And you know what I love too? You know what really good hitters do? They make pitch by pitch adjustments. You saw him take a bad swing last night. Yeah, he had a little front side pull. He finished his swings on his heels, and you could actually see him taking his bottom hand and making that little drive down and through it. He wants to hit the bottom part of the ball. And to be able to do that is, I take you next level.
Another guy who's going to get some love, people are probably going to be surprised to hear this. Do we have Perry? All right, we'll talk to Perry, and then we'll talk about your guy, Rowdy Tellez, later on. Perry, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Perry Manassian, general manager of the Los Angeles Angels. All right, so here's the thing. I want you to be honest with me. Your first day in spring training, and you can do whatever you want. And I'm saying, okay, you got Shohei Ohtani throwing in the bullpen, right. Mike Trout taking BP, Albert Pujols taking BP. Where do you go first, Perry?
You know what? You're probably not going to like this answer, but to me, I've always, growing up, how I grew up, being in a clubhouse, support staff. So, I took the first couple of days, like trainers, mm-hmm. clubhouse guys, video guys, the support staff was where I really jumped into, because you know, guys know how it is. Spring training, especially early.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to do is watch guys early in spring training. So I took those first couple of weeks just to know the coaching staff, the support staff, and it was really beneficial for me.
That's a very political answer. That is. It's an honest answer, and it's a very political answer.
I've learned from the best. Alex is pretty good.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. After all of that, is there conversations that you had with somebody that's been around Mike Trout longer than you have, and that maybe they told you something that you really didn't know that he does off the field, batting cage, something that somebody wouldn't know about Mike Trout?
So, you know what's, this is a lot of the great players I've been around in my career. There's a common, and I mean great, like top shelf, top of the line. They're just different from a competitive standpoint. And whether that's, and Mike is right there with the most competitive people I've ever seen, not just baseball, in anything, cards, basketball, whatever it may be, he's right there front and center and wants to win that. And just talking to Albert, I think Albert's, the same way. He prepares so hard and, he was really impressive in spring training, one of the first guys at the ballpark. His routine is unbelievable and studies and, I think the thing that separates those two and two of the greatest players of all time, in my opinion, are just the competitiveness. There's just a thirst to compete, not only compete, but to win. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, see, I find that really interesting because obviously we don't see Mike Trout as much as we'd like to see him because a lot of the games are on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. And look, I believe that if you're as good as he is, clearly you're a competitor. I don't believe people accidentally become the best player in a sport without being competitive. But I think a lot of people would probably be surprised at that because they look at Mike Trout and go, man, so much of what he does seems to come naturally. But it's interesting hearing that there is that competitive edge to the guy.
Oh, no doubt about it. I'll give you a perfect example. We had an off day a couple days ago. It's 3:30, and I get a text. He's watching a game, a National League game, and he asked me about a pitcher on a National League team that he hadn't seen before. So that's how much he loves the game. That's how much he studies the game, and that's what separates him. I mean, there's a lot of talented players. We see it on a nightly basis, but the separators to me are makeup, just how your DNA and your competitiveness, and this guy checks both boxes, no doubt about it.
Okay, you're talking about checking boxes. Well, let's talk about Ohtani. You throws 101 on the mound, can hit 115 mile an hour ball coming off the bat. Is there any doubt in him being able to do this a whole entire season?
That's the biggest question, right? We're going to find out. And taking this job, I had the ability when I worked in Toronto, actually, to see Shohei 3 years in a row. Before he came out and had a chance to scout him extensively. And I was wowed back then. So, taking this job, I felt like for our club, the best plan for him is to just let him play and do both and be himself and not necessarily have a plan in place. You know, I think this one was more, you tell us, take ownership of your career. You tell us when you can and when you can't. And so far, so good. We've got a long ways to go. But, I mean, he's as talented as any player on a baseball field, no matter where you are. So the things he can do on a nightly basis are the type of things that blow your hair back. So he's an impressive player, great individual, really hard worker. Almost at certain times we're going to have to back him up on the work part and just make sure he takes the pedal off the gas a little bit and allows himself to recover. But, you know, we feel good about the plan we have in place, and we felt for us to have the best team possible and really for the game too. You know, this is such a unique player and part of our responsibility. Obviously the main responsibility is to win games, you know, but part of the responsibility in these jobs is good of the game also. And I think it's great for the game of baseball to have a player like this that can be showcased.
Yeah. Is he confident enough to, you know, and to communicate with you and Joe? You know, maybe he doesn't feel right with his shoulder when he's throwing, or you know, maybe you need to give me a couple of days off offensively. Is he comfortable enough to come to you guys and tell you that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we built trust early in spring. We sat him down. That was the first things we did was Joe and I sat down with him and his interpreter, and you know, we basically told him there are no Ohtani rules. There's no rules. You know, you can hit the day you pitch. You can hit the day before you pitch. You can hit the day after you pitch. You know, but you're going to be – you know, big thing for me was him being part of the club, not being on his own program. Not that he wanted it, but, you know, in his situation, he had a different type of schedule than everybody else because he was trying to accomplish both things over the course of a spring training. And in the past, he had a little different setup. And you know, my thing, and just from talking to Joe, and we were aligned on this, was let's make him part of this club and stretch with the pitchers, play catch with a pitcher, you know, work out, do PFPs with the pitchers. And then after you're done on the pitching side, if you feel like hitting, taking BP, seeing live pitching, then we'll go that route. We can adjust. So worked out really well. We feel like he's in a good place mentally and physically. Obviously, he's done some things early that have been really impressive, and hopefully it carries on the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I should mention that Joe Maddon did say after last night's win that Shohei Ohtani, that he does have a blister in his middle finger. So it looks right now, at least according to Joe, as if the Blue Jays won't see him pitch. But that would get to your point as well, I would think, right? As he's got to be honest with you guys.
Exactly. He's got a blister, and I think you see it with a lot of guys that throw split finger fastballs. Mm-hmm. Cobb has a blister too. We backed him up a day. You know, it's early in the season. It takes some time for that skin to callus up, and you know, we'd rather be cautious. And again, there goes bench communication.
Yep.
Came in, showed us this is what I have, you know, and we felt like the best thing for him and for the team is to take giving him a couple extra days to heal up, and we'll see where it goes.
You know, there's so many big names in that team, but the guy that I've started to enjoy watching, and I admit I watched him a little bit more last year, was David Fletcher. What can you tell us about him? Because man, he certainly has a knack of coming through, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a ball player, and that's a huge compliment. I mean, he's the definition of a baseball player. He will do whatever it takes to help the team win. We were able to extend him in spring at the end of spring training, which I was ecstatic about. And he's a big part of this thing going forward. But on any given night, he'll do things, whether it's move a runner over, whether it's make a defensive play that most people couldn't make. Well, and he's the type of player, I'll give you another example. He's on first base. We were playing the White Sox. There was a fly ball to center field. Center field missed the ball. It ricocheted off him, went right to the right fielder. I mean, really did. I think it took one bounce and went right to the right fielder. And Fletch was able to score from first base on a short fly ball because he just, you know, he gave it 100% and ran the bases like it was a gap, like it was a double in the gap. And that says a lot about him. And he's a leader by example, and we couldn't be more excited to have him for the foreseeable future.
Barry, one of the things I wonder, when you take over as general manager of a team that has a veteran manager and has a pretty strong component, veteran players, and you look at your team, and you are going to make, you know, you're going to make a move, right? You want to make your team better. You want to make a move. How odd or how difficult is it to make that first trade? You know, I'm thinking of, I know you landed, well, I think you landed Raisel Iglesias. You got Jose as well. But how difficult is it to make that first deal?
You know what? When you have, I'll tell you, one of the biggest draws for me for this job. I didn't necessarily have to be a general manager. That wasn't my lifelong goal. I was working in Atlanta for Alex, who I love, and we had a really good team, and I think they're going to be great for the foreseeable future. But there are a couple things from this job that were really appealing. One is ownership, Artie Moreno, the Moreno family, their investment to the club and how bad he wants to win. And two was the manager. You know, the manager is a first-class human being, great individual. Obviously, his resume speaks for itself. Joe has done things in different markets with small market club, big market club. He gets the best out of players, and that was really comforting. So coming into the offseason, so we had a decision to make from a philosophical standpoint, whether we wanted to add, you know, more of an impact type player, high end caliber player to add to this group, or raise the floor. And it's from a baseball operations standpoint, we felt like raising the floor and adding to the bottom of our roster and filling certain holes with quality major league players that have been there and done that were ideal. And that's where Jose Iglesias, who was our first move, but you know, we felt like we had a needed shortstop. He's an outstanding defender. He's come into his own with the bat over the last couple of years. And that was a pretty – you trades are not easy to make in general, especially when you're giving up young talent. But this one, just he fit our needs so well. And just from talking to Joe and the comfort level with the player, we felt pretty good about it.
Perry, listen, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much. Belated congratulations on the job. Yeah. I know you're going to do well. I know you put in a lot of hard miles to get this job. So I'm really happy for you. Stay safe, my friend. Be well.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you. Anytime. Appreciate you having me on.
Take care. It's Perry Minassian, general manager of the Los Angeles Angels. And yeah, he did. He's one of those guys, baseball life or baseball family, a lot of miles, a lot of Holiday Inn Expresses on that man's resume.
Yeah, I'm jealous. You get to go to the ballpark every day, watch Mike Trout and Albert Pujols and Anthony Rendon, we didn't even mention Anthony Rendon.
Let me ask you this now.
Shohei Ohtani, you know.
I want to ask you the same question that I asked Perry. You show up the first day at spring training, you got carte blanche and everybody's doing stuff.
Yeah.
Trout batting practice, Ohtani batting practice, Ohtani in the bullpen. What are you going to see?
Yeah, I think, you know, the 101 doesn't really appeal to me. You see that a lot. You know, I shouldn't say a lot, but you've seen that.
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
The batting practices where you could see, I'm assuming they're hitting in the same group. So, you know, it'd be like Christmas morning going and sitting around that tree, just going, you know, I got this one open. Batting practice, they're in the same group because you could see Ohtani, Trout, and Rendon, you know, in the same group. So you could stand back there and just watch. You know, Ohtani swinging from the hip. You see him, big old swings he takes.
Well, that swing he took on Sunday night was.
Takes those giant swings. So it would be a lot of fun. And you see the Mike Trout swing. Mike Trout don't take that swing. Yeah. Mike Trout is under control. You know, he's not always that way because you're not feeling good with your lower half.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a nice, easy pick the leg up, set it down, attack. You know, he creates a little bit of loft with the bent upper half that allows the barrel to, you know, go underneath the baseball. That's why he likes the ball down. But then you also see with two strikes, he knows they like to go up. They like to go in with two strikes. What's he do? He chokes up a little bit.
Yep.
That way it makes his bat a little quicker. He can get to that ball a little bit better and try and hit a line drive up the middle. It's those, you know, those little methodical, I'm going to think my way through an at bat, and I know what my weakness is. I know how they're going to try and get me out, but you're going to get me out occasionally like that. But consistently, you're not going to.
Tell you what, that's
impressive.
That home run, if it had been hit in a Grapefruit League game, would have killed somebody at recess in that elementary school.
Don't throw 90
right
down the middle. I mean, look, it's you don't, you know, I think, what was he against Stripling? 7 for 9 or something?
Yeah.
That's because you're throwing balls down the middle.
Because I want to come back and talk about Rowdy Tellez and give Rowdy Tellez some love, and I know people are going, you guys are nuts. We're not. Barker's going to do it. Ross Stripling.
I'm not going to give him a ton of love.
No, but we got to
say the optics is a little better.
Other side of the break, because anyway, I want to talk about Trevor Bauer's balls as well. But all that aside, Ross Stripling last night.
Yeah, he's solid. You look good. You know, think about it. When you're throwing bullpens,
right?
Well, yeah. If he gives you 5 innings, 4 runs, 70 pitches, you take that all day and 2 times on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You take that. Okay, for me, if I'm him, I can the slider cutter thing. It ain't no good. I know you like to say I got 4 pitches. How many pitches you got? I got 4 of them. Okay, I could tell you, Jeff, I got 4 pitches. Are they any good?
Yeah.
Take your 3 best. The fastball curveball combination that tunnels. Tunnels means that it looks the same till the last minute. One stays same plane, one drops off and has that. I can steal a strike, I can get back in a count with the breaking ball. I can put you away with one just by the way I grip it, how hard I want to cut it off, that kind of thing. And then he's got some better sync to the changeup. Yeah. You know, the changeup difference, because he just doesn't throw hard, is not a huge difference, but it does have tremendous sync
to it. You don't need a slide.
You don't need it. No. Now, me, you're doing him a favor because it's 87 miles an hour. And if it don't cut, I know the purpose of it is to try and miss a barrel. Get it off the end. Maybe they get a jam shot or, you know, throws it a little bit more to lefties. He gets the end of the bat off away from the righty. You're begging. I know he ain't going to do that. But, you know, maybe he could save him that throwing that four-seamer down the middle or that ball down that's middle, you know, to a Mike Trout or something like that. Maybe he can command that a little bit better because he's just not working on a certain grip or how hard he presses down on one of his fingers. Simplified a little bit more. But, look, the five inning, I told you this yesterday, don't expect six innings. He gives you five innings, what's he going to have to do? Breaking ball's got to be better? And don't throw it down the middle. Well, he did throw it down the middle to one guy. Other than that, he was all right. He was pretty good.
Rowdy Tellez, Michael Conforto, Trevor Bauer. We'll talk about him on the other side. This is Baseball Central. Okay, I just got a... So we're just talking off air, and you were flexing. And you are. You've obviously during the pandemic.
What else are you going to do?
Jeff? Well, I mean, I've lost weight, but you've taken...
Yes, I have not gained weight.
No, you've taken the opportunity to, as you say, get your swole on.
Swole. Don't let it beat you.
Okay, what's this thing about flexing your arms and saying the horse kicked me?
That's just a... I don't know.
The horse kicked people, you so it makes the arms swell up.
Make it look bigger.
God.
I remember never to tell you anything again.
Well, no, it's just the way you talked about the way you were sitting there and you know the bicep, Uncle Bicep comes up and then you mentioned,
gotcha.
Look at that, Jeff. Look at that, Jeff. The horse just kicked me, Jeff. Anyhow, let's give Rowdy Tellez a little bit of love.
Nah, not really.
Well, okay.
I mean, he looked better.
That's the best at bat
he's had all year.
Yes, he made a pinch hit appearance yesterday, and you like the fact that he at least almost
hit a ball hard foul.
Exactly.
That's better than how he has looked.
Yes, it has.
I mean, we're begging, but you take small things away that you did right, and you try and build on that. Mm-hmm. That's all Rowdy can do right now. It looks like, you know, right-hander pitching. You got two lefty starters the next 2 days. He ain't playing. And you know, the writing's on the wall a little bit on how they are not coming out and telling you how they feel about Rowdy, but they're basically telling
you. They're showing
you. They basically are.
Yeah.
You remember I texted you yesterday and said, guess who's not playing?
Yep.
And there's a righty throwing. It's those.
And again, we both agree in this point as well. You know, the only selling point to Rowdy at this point is I know my way around first base a little better than Vladdy, and that's not an issue. So there's really no, I guess what I'm saying is there's no reason to put Rowdy Tellez in the lineup
right
now.
There you go. Unless he's hitting.
So yesterday, and this happened during writer's block. And I admit I wasn't fully paying attention to, but the Mets walked off the Marlins and Michael Conforto was essentially leaned into a pitch over the plate.
Yeah.
Was ruled a hit by pitch. And he was hit by pitch. The game ended. It held up under review.
No.
You're
not allowed to do that. That's not reviewable.
Pardon me. That's correct.
Up to the
umpire. But my point is the umpire admitted after the game to pool reporters.
That he got it wrong.
Why is that not a...
That's a great question. I mean, they can review
subject
most...
To review.
They can review most things. You know, it's up to the discretion of the umpire to whether he's going to call that or not. Me personally, I think you want to get it right.
And guys do lean into pitches.
It determines. You know how you get rid of that? Get rid of all that garb they wear. Don't let them wear the elbow pad. Don't let them wear the shin guard. I never wore any of that. Don't let them wear it. They don't wear it. He ain't going to be throwing his elbow out there. You know why? That hurts. So just get rid of that. That's how you control that. Or just make everything reviewable. Well, what do you care about time? No, you want to get it right. It costs the team a game.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Just don't make any sense to me when when you, most
I mean,
things
I guess
are
the
reviewable.
Point is, I guess the point is, the argument would be, okay, if you can review that, then you, well, you could also review it in the first or second inning, but maybe you should be able to review whether or not
that's,
a guy
that's
was
not
hit
why.
By pitch.
They don't want to take everything out of the hands of the umpire. That's why. They want to still have the umpire to have some kind of, you know, outcome of the game, and that's one of them. He heard that go off his elbow. Because, yeah, he's ringing him up.
Was that
until he heard that?
Did he defy one of the unwritten rules of the game? And if you're Michael Conforto, should you not be digging in tonight, today against the Marlins?
I mean, the Marlins aren't going to win a bunch of games anyway.
Right, no,
I don't know.
But if you were the Marlins, you're going to play these guys. What,
you're going to
play these guys 14 more times. No, I'm just asking. If you were in the Marlins,
I don't think Conforto did that on purpose. I just think that's a natural reaction. It's not the first time he's ever done that. He's not doing that on purpose. He just, because he's wearing that elbow guard, he's not in a hurry to get it out of the way.
Okay.
I said, how you fix it?
Okay.
Don't let him wear it. It's never going to happen.
So you're in the. Other people pointed that out, that it's kind of a natural reaction to do what he did.
Yeah, look at Ohtani. Ohtani's basically got his entire right arm covered for obvious reasons, because he likes to throw 101 off the mound. But it's a bad way to lose a game. It truly is a bad way, and you want him to get it right. The umpire made a mistake. It's okay to make a mistake. Raise your hand, go ask the umpires, get together, say, what did you see? Get it right. It's not hard.
We know that Trevor Bauer has been very outspoken in the past about, he essentially accused the Houston Astros of cheating with spin rates, right? He's talked about how this going back to 2018, where he tweeted that if only there was a really quick way to increase spin rate. Like, what if you could trade for a player knowing that you could bump a spin rate a couple hundred RPM and that blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera.
You know how I said you do that? The only way you do that is to use a substance.
Yeah. And, of course, now Major League Baseball, as a means of cracking down, if you want to call it, and stuff like this, they're taking balls out of games and sending them off to be analyzed.
I mean, they use rosin. Like, what? I don't understand.
But here's the thing. You know, now people are wondering. Look, if you're Trevor Bauer and you've spent 3 years basically suggesting that somebody is that folks might be cheating to improve spin rate, then all of a sudden your spin rate improves, and all of a sudden baseball decides that they're going to crack down on stuff like this. Like, if you're Trevor, but you can't be surprised that this has happened, can you? You can't be surprised that this has happened.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think his stuff moves so much. His secondary pitches move so much. You know, maybe a lot of it, too. His four-seamer has a lot of backspin, too, which is an odd thing.
Explain that.
Well, it comes off the fingers. You know, to create backspin with four-seam and have that, you know, look of the rising fastball, it has to really stay on the fingers till the very last second. Well, a common sense would tell you the only way you do that is to have a little something that's sticky.
Right.
That would keep it on that thing till a very last second to really drive off the end of that baseball to get it to backspin. I mean, again, it's you know, if it really is that they really are finding something that's used that you're not allowed to use. You use pine tar. Everybody does that. They got it on the inside of their head.
What was the other
head.
Thing they were using?
Greg Maddux, I used to think, had something behind his teeth.
But the other stuff, bullfrog. Bullfrog.
Icy
it's
hot.
Like,
I used to have a little icy. Somebody had icy hot too.
No, guys would use it. It's bullfrog. It's like a bug spray or something like that, and they would mix it. Guys would be mixing it with rosin.
Yeah,
you know, to create a
anything to keep it to stick on the fingers as long as possible. That's what it is.
I gotta tell you, I really don't have a big deal. I don't have a problem with that. If you're now, put it this way, I have less of a problem with guys using stuff.
Okay,
that is. Let me finish. I have less of a problem with guys using stuff that is kind of part of the game, pine tar, rosin, and all that. I got less of a problem with that than I do some dude using computers in-game or banging on a garbage can.
You did spew it out both sides of the mouth a little bit. Pine tar and rosin is a little natural part of the game. It's
yeah,
okay.
No,
everybody
that's
uses
what I'm
it.
Saying.
Well,
I got
if
no
you
problem.
Start using the bullfrog or whatever you're talking about,
bullfrog.
That's a little different.
Oh, come on. It's in the dugout.
That's going outside the box.
If it's in the dugout, you should be able to use it.
You should be. So pitchers need every advantage known to man. I don't get to see you a bunch. You get to shift on me.
It's insect repellent.
Now you get to use insect repellent.
Bullfrog sunscreen and insect repellent. Yeah, I don't have any problem with that. It's
thank
in the
goodness
dugout.
You're not making decisions.
No, it's in the dugout
for baseball.
It's in the dugout. I have no problem
bullfrog
with guys using stuff.
In the
stuff.
Dugout. I've been in how many dugouts?
Bullfrog
I've never heard
sunscreen.
Of bullfrog. Can you put some of that bullfrog on my arm?
It's in. I've seen it in the clubhouse. It's right next to the gum.
You have not seen that before.
I have seen bullfrog sunscreen
it's
products.
It's in bullfrog.
It's called bullfrog. Look. Right there. Bullfrog.
Yeah, I've never seen
engineered
that.
For ultimate performance and protection wherever you play.
Perfect. So he's running by
never
the
heard of
he's running by the bullfrog box and saying spray a little bit of that on me.
I have an issue if you're cutting the ball with a knife or your belt buckle or something like that. But man, if you want to put goop on it, I got no problem with that. No problem with having a little bit of goop on it there.
So it's okay to rub a little out off your neck, slap a little out on the baseball, get it spinning.
You can slap whatever you want on balls. I got no problem with it, man. Don't forget, game two of this 4-game series against the Angels goes tonight. It'll be the opener for the Blue Jays, David Phelps. God, I hate openers. And the first pitch will be at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. We will be back Monday. It is NHL trade deadline day, but they're still going to let us on from 5 to 6. Get you set for the Yankees and the Jays from Dunedin. Mr. Barker, thank you for doing this. Have a great weekend. Say hi to Hazel. Say hi to Chase.